Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Columbus police have promised a full and open investigation after a white police officer shot and killed a black 13-year-old boy. Police say Officer Brian Mason shot Tyree King, who was a suspect in an armed robbery, after King pulled what appeared to be a handgun from his waistband. Officers, none of whom were wearing body cameras, later revealed that the eighth grader was carrying a BB gun. Mayor Andrew Ginther called the death of King unacceptable.
And we as a community need to come to grips with the fact, with such easy access to guns, whether they're firearms or replicas, there is something wrong in this country, and it is bringing its epidemic to our city streets. And a 13-year-old is dead in the city of Columbus because of our obsession with guns and violence.
Coming up, we're going to have our weekly reporters roundtable. Joining us now by phone is Columbus Dispatch reporter Lucas Sullivan. Welcome back, Lucas.
Hey, Ann, how are you? Good morning.
Pretty good. Columbus police have arrested a 19-year-old who told them that he was with 13-year-old Tyree King during a robbery before the boy was fatally shot by an officer on Wednesday night. So there was a robbery. There was a gun?
There was a robbery and there was a gun. Now, who was doing it and what happened shortly after that the gun ended up with Tyree King is something we still don't know.
Officials, the police chief held up a picture of the BB gun that Tyree allegedly brandished before he was shot. And at the same time, the mayor is outraged, you know, really during the same press conference. So, or press media availability they had afterward. There's a lot of chatter about this, a lot of conflicting points of view on this. And some people have compared it to, say, what happened in Cleveland with the youngster who was playing with a BB gun, Tamir Rice, who was playing with a gun at a park. Comparisons?
Well, you know, the comparisons, you know, that we can make are obvious in the fact that they were both very young. And they both had, or Tamir Rice had a weapon. The police here say that Tyree King had the weapon. But there is one big difference, and it's kind of stating the obvious, though, that there was a crime going on. Police were called to that scene because of a crime in Columbus. Whereas in Cleveland, Tamir Rice was, you know, in an open area, just kind of what many believe now is just kind of playing around with the gun, not trying to commit a crime.
What do we know about the BB gun that Tyree allegedly had and allegedly pulled out from his waistband before the police killed him? What do we know about that? Just a BB gun that looked like a real one?
It looks exactly like a real gun. A layman could not tell a difference. It had a laser on the right underneath the gun barrel. It is a weapon that can be, and I don't, you know, if you call a BB gun a weapon, I mean, my parents gave me a BB gun when I was a young boy and went out and did target shooting with it. But this is a gun that can be a BB gun that can be purchased at Walmart or other local retail stores for about $40 to $50.
So it's legal to have a gun that is that realistic, a BB gun that looks like, quote unquote, a real gun.
Yes, and it is something that is, you know, I believe there's already some talk of a push to get state legislators to do something about these kind of replica or look-alike guns, BB guns that look like real guns, and either make them a different color or something that they can be discerned now, because you know, you have this, and you have Tamir Rice. You have these two major instances where, you know, it would have been helpful to know that the gun in the Tyree King incident was a BB gun. I'm sure the officer may have done something a little different if he was aware.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Coming up, we're going to have our usual weekly reporters roundtable. Right now, I'm talking with Lucas Sullivan, Columbus Dispatch reporter, covering the shooting of 13-year-old Tyree King by police officers after an alleged robbery. And also after Tyree allegedly pulled a what appeared to be a handgun from the waist of his pants, the waistline of his pants, but turned out to be apparently a BB gun that looks like a real gun, a replica of a real gun. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Please respond quickly, because we're just going to talk about this segment. I'm not saying that's the end of the conversation going forward. Of course, there's lots to talk about. Lucas Sullivan's good enough to spend some time with us, though, and get us caught up on what's going on. So what happened in the wake? What do we know about what happened? There was a vigil, probably lots of people talking about it in a church on Sunday. How's the city responded from where you sit as a reporter?
Well, The city's response has been, Mayor Ginther and Police Chief Kim Jacobs went out and held, on Friday, they went out and did a walk with clergy. And before that, at noon, the mayor had a bunch of clergy and some community activists at City Hall to engage in a discussion about this. The discussion on Friday night was, the mayor and police chief opened themselves up to a lot of questions and didn't try to dodge many of the questions that were asked. So they're trying to be as aggressive as they can and respond to this. Everyone knows the complications of an investigation, and we all want answers. And trust me, us in the media, we would like to be able to give those answers. So, they're doing what they can. I know that there have been some vigils, and I'm sure there's going to be protests in the coming days. I think there's something scheduled today at about 12:30 at City Hall to demand more money for de-escalation training and things like that for police officers. And so you're going to have that I would imagine in the coming days and weeks.
What kind of questions are people asking the mayor and the police chief?
Well, the questions are, why did the officer shoot? Why was the officer in that area? This was the second day in that new area. And, the officer had there was an open position the officer had put in. He was transferred there. And so there have been those types of questions. There's also been types of questions like, why didn't the officer just tase him, or why didn't the officer shoot in a leg or an arm? And I've been working on that part of it, and tasing is just not something that they're trained to do in those situations where they believe a gun is involved. And their training is, if they believe a gun is involved and they fear for their safety or the safety of others, they are trained to use lethal force.
Yeah, a lot of people often ask, why don't they just shoot him in the knee or shoot him in the hand or something like that?
There's a significant amount of research out there that says limb targeting just doesn't work. That's what it's called, limb targeting.
Okay.
I'm sorry. But shooting at the arms or legs, that the officer doesn't have time to take aim in a lot of situations. And more importantly, the officer can't always subdue someone that's a threat by shooting them in the arm or the leg. That even shot in those limbs, someone can still, potentially kill others or the officer.
Adam in Mount Vernon, you're on the air. Hi, Adam.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I had a comment, and thanks for having me on. Mm-hmm. In relation to, you were talking about making BB guns or toy guns look different. And the problem, I thought of this when I heard them talking about legislation for trying to make toy guns illegal to look like real guns. And I think the problem comes in that we never get any legislation for real guns, and you can make a real gun look like whatever you want. So I think that kind of adds to the issue there as well. And that's all I have to say.
Okay. Thanks a lot for your call. Let's see. Jim, I guess you're on your way to Athens. Jim?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, and we worked together at the Dispatch. I was a photographer there for 12 years.
Jim what?
Jim DeCamp.
Oh, hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Yeah, back in 1997, during my tenure there, I saw a number of police shootings, was personally witness to them. But the one that sticks out is in 1997, there was a bank robbery reported in Reynoldsburg. Police responded, surrounded the building. The robber took hostages, tried to get away, and the police shot and killed him. It turned out later that the robber had only a BB gun.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Crossman 45 caliber replica that he was using to take hostages and try and get away from the cops with it. I don't know the motives of this shooting. I mean, that's to be determined. And, you know, it may be that he was just trying to pull it out of his pants to say, hey, it's only a BB gun. But then again, an officer on the scene has to make a split-second decision. And I've been through some of the police training. They only have a split second. And they're trained, if it's a gun, you take that suspect down. And a 13-year-old with a gun can kill an officer just as easily as a 30-year-old. The second half is I've never heard of any kind of education that the police do going into schools, even at like kindergarten age, second grade, fourth grade, just saying, this is how we do things. And if you do this, it's going to be an issue. And I think that there needs to be some education sent out there.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Jim. It's great hearing from you. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
But, Barry in Bowling Green, you're on the air. Hi, Barry.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
First of all, let me state that my brother is a retired police captain with the Manatee County Sheriff's Department in Florida.
All right.
25 years. And those fellows face the darkest elements of our society. And I agree with the last caller, there needs to be some education. And the education should be that you don't walk around with a gun that looks real, number one. You never pointed one at a police officer, number two. But the most important one is obey lawful police orders and argue it in court. If you disagree with it, argue about it in court. That's what our courts are for. But the police job is the most dangerous job that any of our civil servants have. The fire department doesn't have people shooting at them. And I just think we need to get off the kick that guns are the problem. Our society's the problem. Turn your primetime TV on and take a look at what we are. We glorify violence. If there's a national tragedy, my God, within a couple of months there'll be a movie about it. It's ridiculous. It's us.
Barry...
It's like Pogo said back in 1963 on the first Earth Day, we met the enemy and they are us. It's how we think and what we've let our society become. That's my opinion.
Barry, thank you so much.
Thank you.
What about that, Lucas Sullivan? Is that something that you're looking at? You said you're looking at the whole issue of the BB gun and what it looks like and that kind of a thing. But what about what kids understand? Kids, I mean, Tyree is 13 years old. He's like the definition of, you know, a kid. I mean, it's the craziest age of all.
Yeah, I haven't explored that. I've been paying a lot of attention and working in the days since this on, you know, the type of de-escalation training the police do and also, how they're trained to use their weapons. So, and a lot of that stuff is already known, but the conversation continues to intensify about other avenues besides pulling out your weapon. You know, something that Chief Jacobs has said, and I've heard her say, and it's kind of stuck with me and I've been looking into, is that there was a study done several years ago by a professor in Fresno State, and he asked a group of law enforcement officers, if a person is pointing a gun at you and you're the officer, do you have a right to shoot, or does the officer have a right to shoot? And all the police officers said yes. And only 11% of the citizens that were surveyed said, yes, the officer has a right to shoot. A lot of the responses were the officer should get a better idea if the person really does intend to shoot. The officer should use a taser. The officer should you know, back out of the situation. So there is a definite disconnect and maybe even a growing disconnect on use of lethal force, on how officers are trained to use it, and what the public expects. But to the point about getting into schools, I don't know if I really want an officer standing up and talking to my 10, 11, 12, even 13-year-old child and saying, talking about a gun and what officers do. I think that's a little, I mean, the shocking thing about this for many of us is that, and in Tamir Rice's case too, is that the children were so young.
Yeah. Right. It's, yeah, and yet you think, did anybody have the talk with, you know, Tyree King, about how to keep yourself safe? But I guess that's to come, right? So, Lucas Sullivan, thanks. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I would say I don't think all the facts are out in this
right.
case. So I know people, social media, and I know you see it too, people want to jump to conclusions and draw conclusions. We don't have all the pieces yet. I think that the arrest of Demetrius Braxton, the 19-year-old that was with Tyree King, I think in the coming days and weeks, we're going to get more of the pieces together. And I think from what we're hearing from our sources, it's going to involve Braxton more than he has told us he was involved in it.
And by the way, the theft involved $10, right?
That's according to the 911 call, yes. The police have not said $10. That is according to the folks and the victim who talked to the 911 dispatcher.
Okay. Well, Lucas Sullivan, there'll be more on this coming up, and I appreciate your time today to talk about it. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ann.
Yep. That was Lucas Sullivan. He's a reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. We've been talking about the police shooting of 13-year-old Tyree King last week. The police have arrested a 19-year-old who told them that he was with King during a robbery, an alleged robbery, before the boy was fatally shot on Wednesday night. So we will turn our sights now to politics with our weekly reporters roundtable. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's time for our weekly Reporters Roundtable. A lot to talk about in presidential politics, as usual. Joining us, Julie Carr-Smythe, Statehouse correspondent for the Associated Press. Julie, welcome back.
Good morning, Ann.
Also, Jackie Borchardt, Statehouse reporter for Cleveland.com. Thanks for joining us, Jackie.
I'm glad to be here.
And by phone, Joe Ingles, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Great to be here.
So, Donald Trump finally agrees that President Obama is an American citizen and blames the whole thing on the 2008 Clinton campaign. Julie Carr-Smythe, what do you make of this? What's going on here?
Well, I think
after 5 years of saying that.
Right. I mean, clearly we're seeing Trump trying to position with more voters to kind of address some of his controversial positions. We've seen that with his immigration stance. He's trying to moderate somewhat to get more of the center voter. I was up in Akron in Kent this weekend covering Bernie Sanders, who is out there for Hillary, saying that this he was trying to make the case that the birther thing was so destructive to the Obama presidency that it really shouldn't be forgiven that quickly. But I think definitely that Trump's folks are trying to get him to position toward the middle.
Well, do you think the middle, Jackie Borchardt, I mean, by definition, doesn't the middle appear a little more thoughtful? I don't know.
It's not.
Is this something that, I mean, he can change his mind after 5 years and the middle goes, oh, all right.
I mean, yeah, it would have. I think that 5 years deserved much deeper explanation, or you know, even an apology for the kind of ripple effect that those statements have had. You know, he made those comments in 2011 when he was feeling out a presidential run, and they stuck with quite a few people who are now probably supporting his run now, his campaign. And he couldn't just stand up there and say, this was wrong and I've lied about it and I should have, you know, said it earlier. He also had to throw it back to Hillary Clinton and say, well, she started it. And she started this rumor, and that's why we're here. And I'm the one that's ending it, and we're not going to talk about it anymore, which is not true. I guess there have been some reports that a Clinton aide back in 2008 had mentioned it to a reporter, but that was not something that the Clinton campaign pushed in the public discourse at all.
So, Joe Ingles, what do you make of it? I mean, people are talking about this in a good way.
Well, you know, here's the thing, Ann. I have never heard Hillary Clinton ever question whether Barack Obama was born in Kenya. I've never heard that, okay?
Right.
But, you know, at this point, I'm just wondering if facts even matter anymore. Because to some people, you know, you can prove that the world is round and they will still, you know, believe whatever they've been told to believe, you know? Facts don't seem to change the minds of a lot of people anymore. They distrust the media. They think we're all lying to them, and that's been fed to them over many years. And so I don't know. I don't know that this hurts his core support, you know, with his supporters. I don't know that his comments on Barack Obama and whether he's a citizen or not, I don't think that really hurts him with his voters. As far as people he's trying to bring in, I'm not sure.
A really high percentage of the people who are his core supporters, the people who support him absolutely for president, do believe that the lie that Barack Obama was not born in the United States. Julie Carr-Smith, do you think it erodes at all some of that support?
I think perhaps it will, although as Joe points out, I mean, this particular news cycle is the most unpredictable, most bizarre. And, you know, it's been very typical of Donald Trump to say one thing, say the exact opposite the next day, throw the media into kind of a tizzy of fact-checking and reality-checking that really is just not resonating with a particular section of the public. Like she says, they've been really well-groomed to ignore the media, to consider the media as much a part of the problem as anything else. And
well, I know
they forgive him a lot.
I know there are listeners out there who support Donald Trump, and I'd love to hear from them. Is, you know, maybe this whole contention that Barack Obama was not born in the United States, that lie, was something that you kind of held your nose about and supported Trump anyway, or maybe it's the foundation or part of the foundation. It's certainly the foundation of Trump's politics. I mean, how he got into politics in the first place. So caller, listeners, if you can call in and tell us how it's affected you. I know it's, you know, just a snapshot notion, but I'd still like to hear from people. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page. But Jackie Borchardt, is it sort of a thing of doublethink, do you think, that people will...
I think it's the latest example of what happens when you have two major party candidates that are also so disliked. And that's more of a balancing. When something like this happens, when we've seen Trump get pinned down on a lie in the past, the supporters who, you know, traditionally you'd think, okay, that was a big issue for them, like immigration, for example, you know, building
now
the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, no, we're not going to, you know, deport 11 million people at once or, you know, what he kind of walked that back a little bit. You'd expect people for that to be a big issue to say, well, I'm not going to support him anymore. But they compare him then to Hillary Clinton. And for that issue, then it's like, OK, well, compared to, you know, all they point to things that Hillary Clinton has done or hasn't done to explain why they still support Trump. And you see it the other way, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Once again, 614-292-8513. If you're a Trump supporter, want to give us your feedback on how these latest revelations of untruths affected your support or not, for Donald Trump, 614-292-8513. Now, Donald Trump is now ahead of Hillary Clinton in Ohio. Hillary's been leading in the polls for months. Any sense about the swing? It's just things are just tightening up. There's a lot of questions about the polls themselves. Joe Ingles, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think it is neck and neck, but I also think it's still early. I mean, we've been guessing at this all summer long, let's face it. And I think a lot of people still haven't really thought about these candidates. We haven't had any debates. And, oh, by the way, let's not forget that Hillary has a ton of ad space reserved prior to the November election. I think I had seen 70%, around 70%. In the market here. So, I mean, if that's the case, you know, and you've got a lot of ads coming in, you've got debates to go, and it's this close right now, I think it's still too close to call.
Well, Jackie Borchardt.
Yeah, so I looked at the polling kind of averages this morning, and really interesting to look at a graph of this summer, for example. And it starts out, you know, where they're kind of close, and Hillary pulls ahead, and then she sinks down, you know, while Trump rises. And there's 3 points, and we're in the third one of this, if you look back since the beginning of the summer. But every time, it doesn't swing back where then Trump is up in big leads over Clinton. It's Clinton kind of rebounds, and then she hits another low point, like the RNC. That was another one where, you know, Trump got a nice little post-convention bump. And now we're seeing again where it's starting to narrow. But as you said, you have to look a little bit deeper into the polls. And if you look at the last couple polls, some of them – one thing you always look for is, you know, if they were registered voters or likely voters and how they determined whether someone's a likely voter or not. And then also some of these polls, the ones within the margin of error, some of them leaned more to the right or more to the left as far as how many, you know, Democrats or Republicans made up the polling. So those are all things to weigh. It's definitely much closer than either candidate would like to see, I think, at this point.
One thing to know about the Ohio electorate is that Republicans do tend to come out much more on election day.
Turnout's higher. Typically.
Their turnout is typically higher, and I think that a couple of the polls do skew it slightly Republican for that reason. And I myself am not convinced that's going to be what happens
again.
This
once
year.
Again, a very different year, perhaps this
or
year.
Or they say yes, I'm going to come out, but then they just don't vote in that race, which I've heard from a lot of Republicans. I'm just going to skip it. I've heard from Democrats. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to skip it. So whether or not they come out or are likely and who they pull the lever for is going to be really pretty interesting.
And all the conventional political wisdom has kind of been thrown on its head this year anyway. So just, you know, especially now, putting a lot of stock in polls is, I think, dangerous, premature.
Jim from Fayette. Is that Fayette County, Jim?
Yes.
Okay, welcome to the show.
I think that a lot of people are willing to overlook the things that Hillary Clinton does, the things that Donald Trump does and said, because they're just totally fed up of the old party machinery from both sides in Washington, D.C. and around the nation of not getting anything done. And so as a result, they're willing to overlook these different comments of Mr. Trump that makes. I support him, but I don't like a lot of the comments that he said. I don't like Hillary Clinton for the things that she's been involved with. I mean, from when they were in the White House, the number of people that's worked for them that's totally disappeared, the Benghazi thing, the email thing. I mean, General Petraeus, he was censured very heavily for doing something that was much less than she did with her emails on security. And I think that the American people are just fed up of politics as usual. And when you see the number of primary voters that Bernie Sanders got, mm-hmm. that Donald Trump got, which were record numbers, mm-hmm. Proves that point.
Let me ask you, Jim, is there anything Donald Trump could say or do that would make you pause?
Oh, I think that he's said lots of things already that's made me plot.
Well, I mean, question your support. Let's put it that way.
Not really, because I guess I'm, you know, I was in favor of him because he financed his own primary campaign and wasn't getting bought off. I mean, if you give somebody $500,000 for a campaign, do you think that they're not expecting something in return for it?
Well, he's asking for money now.
Oh, yeah. He is now, sure. But look how much he has to raise compared to just what you said, the number of ads that Hillary Clinton has booked in the future. Yeah.
Julie Carr-Smyth, does Jim in Fayette County sound like that's what sounds to me like a typical Trump supporter?
Yes, absolutely. I feel that he articulated it pretty well, that the sense that because Trump is self-funded, he's independent. And I think, honestly, that some people are saying to themselves, well, he's self-funded. His operation is somewhat self-directed in a way that other campaigns aren't. I mean, Hillary comes off very much as scripted. And I think for some people, the turns of position appear to be spontaneity, appear to be human, and appear to look like, well, just an average guy here who's not being handled, fumbling his way through this process as an independent, you know, free thinker.
Jim, thanks for that call. We appreciate it. You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We'll return with more callers. And if you want to email us, allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher, and it is our weekly Reporters Roundtable. We are talking presidential politics. What else? The polls are narrowing, if you follow such things, in Ohio, but they're not so great in some other key states, like Pennsylvania, for instance. Ohio is often considered a must-win state. The question is that absolutely the case? By phone, we've got Joe Ingles, the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, with us in the studio, Julie Carr-Smyth of the Associated Press, and Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now I'm reading, Hillary's ahead in Pennsylvania. Trump absolutely needs Pennsylvania to win. He can probably go without Ohio. She can probably go without Ohio, but everybody needs Pennsylvania to win. What is it, Julie Carr-Smyth?
I think this will be the year with all the things we're talking about that are so unusual. I mean, Trump being self-funded, Trump skipping one of the primary debates. If you recall that, he went across the street and held a fundraiser for the veterans. All of the fact-checking.
A fundraiser that did not generate a lot of money that went to veterans groups, by the
way,
but go ahead.
Right, and all of the seeming inconsistencies and what we used to call flip-flops that are just flying out there. So I feel kind of like the model that Ohio has to be delivered to the winner in order for that person to take the White House may be in flux as well. AP has done some analysis that shows there are a number of other ways for Hillary to get to 270, that electoral votes that will not necessarily include Ohio.
Carol in Washington Courthouse, you're on the air. Hi, Carol.
Hi, thanks. This is not meant to be an excuse for Donald Trump, but I will say this. He is a civilian, unlike some of the other government employees who have misspoken to. And one comes to mind is Harry Reid. When he said about Mitt Romney, he said, Mitt Romney hasn't paid taxes in 10 years. Then when it was pointed out that Mitt Romney had paid taxes and they asked him about it, he said, well, it worked, didn't it? And frankly, it did work. That was held against Mitt Romney. And then you think of Nancy Pelosi, who said Trump's supporters are all uneducated white people. What a gaffe. What a horrible thing to say. You think about Biden, who said the Republicans will have all of you people in chains again, all of you black people in chains again. So, I mean, there are such horrible things that have been said by people, government employees, who should know better. So I look at Trump and I think, well, he's a civilian. He's never been a government employee. And half of the time he wasn't even running for president when he made such horrible statements. And the times that he has been running, he really, I can cut him a little bit of slack because he doesn't know all of the protocols, but he's getting to know a little bit better now. So while I don't like some of the things he said, I think about some of these government employees, and wow, they've just been given a real pass. Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi should have even been thrown out of office, and frankly would have been if they'd been Republicans. What does your panel think about that?
Okay, Carol, thanks a lot. Jackie Borchardt, well, it worked, didn't it?
I suppose so. I mean, yeah, gaffes happen often in election seasons, and usually, though, you know, their feet get held to the fire in some respect, and people forget about it and move on. And I think that there's a little bit of a difference with Trump's accusations that the president wasn't born here, in that they went on for 4 years and he repeated them. And since he has been running for president, he's been asked time and time again about that claim, and he's refused to answer it. He's refused to tackle it directly, and that's why we saw the big press conference, the big to do about it last week. It was everywhere. Breaking news: Trump says that Obama was born in the U.S. And it's kind of like, okay, should that really be breaking news?
It's the news was that Trump admitted,
right? Because he had for so long. And so many times since he's been running for president. And I think, you know, his lack of a government service background is really attractive to a lot of voters. Mm-hmm. But he's been running for president for over a year now. So yeah. And you have seen an evolution in the speeches that he's been giving and his speaking. It has improved a little bit. He has started reading off of a teleprompter on occasion and become more of a scripted candidate. But that was one thing that even Republicans were saying, like, there's no excuse for that. That needs to go away. And that's what he was trying to do last week, was kind of try to wrap it up and put it under the rug.
Well, and you have to me, I draw a distinction. Even on the immigration thing, which definitely got him a big bump in the primaries and helped him to victory in the primaries, to his position on the wall and immigration. Even if he changes that radically, it's still a personal belief. It still could be a change in your heart and mind about a position on an issue. In the case of the birther thing, that's not the case. No facts have changed in this. Mm-hmm. Evidence has been out there, as Jackie says, for 4 or 5 years, even to the point where Obama presented his birth certificate. I remember AP running around Hawaii trying to find it. And the evidence has been laid out and did not change. And it's not it's pitched with this press conference as if it was a personal belief that he decided to move off of, as opposed to a fact.
Mark in Clintonville, you're on the air. You wanted to talk about Clinton. Welcome.
Yes. Quite honestly, I don't understand this moral equivalency between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, so many people are drawing. There is no moral equivalency. If you look back at Hillary Clinton's record, and I've been no means a supporter of her, it's far, far cleaner than anybody is willing to believe at this point. And secondly, if you look at the campaign, the tactics from the Trump campaign, you see very crude falsehoods repeated consistently. The campaign tactics were drawn straight from Joseph Goebbels' playbook, and I think he would be impressed by the GOP's campaign.
Referring to, of course, the Hitler associate. Thanks a lot for that call. Joe Ingles, that comparison, I mean, what do you make?
That's not the first time I've heard that comparison made, but, I think one thing that I'm noticing here in this election, and I think probably you are too, is the difference in the way the media is
played in this election. And when I say played, Trump is very media savvy in a way, and he knows how to play the mainstream media. And if you don't believe that, just look at the day that he was coming out with his anti-birther comment. He had all of the major media, the television stations, going live with his basic commercial for a Trump hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And they stayed with it forever and then finally cut away from it. And now we're hearing some chatter in media circles about how to handle Trump and if he does that again, what to do. But, you know, I think in a larger sense, if you look at the electorate, you can see this disconnect that really is glaring this time around. I think it's been there and it's been percolating. But now, you know, you don't have as many people reading newspapers. People are on social media and they're self-screening their news so that they get news that agrees with their point of view. So they don't necessarily pick up on other things that are happening because they're getting it all from one point of view. And then, you know, they don't believe the mainstream media. You have all of those factors together in one soup, and it causes this. I mean, it causes a lot of people to distrust the media and not believe what we're saying. And you know, you get this environment where people can believe something that they have no basis to believe, or, you know, discard something that they should be believing. They don't know what to believe anymore because they think it's all bunk.
Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I was just going to comment about the whole Donald Trump being self-funded. He actually wasn't. He loaned his campaign millions of dollars so that he could get the money back, and he also he was donated over $7 million in the primaries.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You're absolutely right. I think people, you know, when I brought that up to people like the caller from Fayette County, they say, well, yeah, but mostly compared to the other candidates and that sort of thing. But you're absolutely right. He's loaned himself the money for the campaign, which means that any money he collects, hence, can be he can pay himself back for that. And also he did raise $7 million in contributions during the campaign. So, Chris, thanks a lot for that call. Appreciate that. I could try to squeeze another one more in here. And Ryan, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. The media does want very much to be viewed as politically neutral, but, you know, killing ISIS members and family members of ISIS fighters in violation of Geneva Treaty, you know, separating families to try to deport 11.5 million people. These are objectively bad ideas that I feel garner contempt, frankly, from all adult-minded members of our nation's political talking heads.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it might not be garnering enough scrutiny because the media wants so much to be viewed as neutral.
Hmm. That's Julie Carsmith?
That's a really good point. I think within our profession that we look at trying to get at the closest possible version of the truth, not necessarily just simply to put two contradicting statements side by side. The problem in politics is that it's somewhat different than an investigative story because you do want to balance or attempt to balance at least the two major party candidates and put things side by side that they say, or it on balance to put out a political report in the case of the AP that is having different stories that are showing perspectives on all the campaigns or the major campaigns as much as we can. The primary in this case was obviously 16 or 17 people. It wasn't very easy to do that and to fact check everything. Mm-hmm. And I know somebody like John Kasich, you know, kind of felt that his message wasn't able to get out as much nationally because there were just so many people. And speaking of that, I guess he had a little kerfuffle with Priebus over the weekend.
Ryan's Priebus over the weekend. Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. Ryan, thanks for that call. And I do want to talk about what Ryan's Priebus said. He said that Well, this is from Daryl Rowland in the Dispatch. If John Kasich really wants to run for president in 2020, he's going to have to have trouble with the GOP. Republican National Committee Chairman Reince Priebus said Sunday. What's he getting at, Jackie Borchardt?
So he didn't say John Kasich.
Well, right.
Exactly. Just to make that clear, he said that all the candidates that ran in this year's race, which would include Jeb Bush, who hasn't, you know, really jumped out to support Donald Trump either, Ted Cruz, who famously did not endorse him while speaking at the RNC. You know, he just said that anybody who's run for president in this cycle needs to come out and support the nominee because they all agreed to that pledge a year ago that they would support the eventual nominee if it wasn't them. And they used party resources. And, you know, if they want the party to help them out in the future, they need to help out the party now. And of course, you know, being in Ohio and having our governor, who is still, you know, making himself known in the national press,
meeting with the president last week,
standing at the White House podium. I mean, you don't really get much closer to being the president. Obviously, then the deduction is, well, that's a shaking your finger at John Kasich. And his presidential campaign manager sent out a memo basically blasting Priebus and saying he's, you know, a political operative that Kasich doesn't need to listen to, and that he should be thanking John Kasich for elevating the party's message of to one of bringing people together and working in a bipartisan manner like you saw at the White House last week.
Yeah. Joe Engels, you know, what do you think? I mean, what do you make of that? It's, people are saying that that they need to focus on 2016, not 2020.
Yeah, and I think that's probably what they're, you know, they're thinking about 2020, obviously. But, you know,
it is a sign.
Isn't it kind of telling that all these candidates are straying away from Trump? I mean, what, you know, is that more philosophical? I mean, Governor Kasich would tell you it's a philosophical difference that he just cannot embrace the principles of Donald Trump. But, you know, if you look at it a little further, tactically, if they're staying away from Donald Trump because they think Donald Trump's going to fail, it kind of makes you wonder how many others are out there, you know, on the sidelines doing that. And is there something they know that we don't know, or you know, what's going on behind that? I have more questions about that than answers.
Well, what we have seen is John Kasich has come out and is campaigning with Rob Portman, who has a very vigorous and well-funded campaign for U.S. Senate, and he is not doing the same for the presidential campaign. As a governor, Kasich has an amazing network of support across the state. He's a very strong, well-connected governor with people in every corner of the state that really could be turning out votes for Trump if he told them to, and he's not doing that. And so it's going to be interesting to see if they can win without that.
Well, it will be interesting to see. We have, what, 50-something days to go. Julie Carr-Smyth, thanks for joining us today to talk about it.
Thanks for having me.
Julie Carr-Smyth, State House correspondent for the Associated Press. Also, there on the phone, Joe Engels, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks to you as well.
Great to be here.
And Jackie Borchardt, State House reporter for Cleveland.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to all the calls. Sorry we didn't get to all the callers or the emails next week. Same time, same place. Join us. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.